Well, hello there, and again, welcome to another session here on Web Chat. Good to have all of you with us once again. I've got my colleague, good friend again, Mr. Wayne Hendricks, with us once more. Wayne, hello there.
Howdy, Bill.
Good to have you again.
It's good to be here.
I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
As you can see, we have quite a topic on our agenda today because a lot of what is going on in the world, frankly, is rather surprising. I don't know about you, but I'm somewhat stunned, Wayne, over this emergence of this new populism, this nationalism. Because, you know, people don't like to use the word nationalism because it's kind of aggressive, it's kind of more dominating and controlling, and is more nefarious, so to speak, you know, military-oriented. But populism is, you know, used, I think, a little bit more willingly and easier to embrace because it's more low-key.
Right.
But truth be known, they're synonymous. I mean, populism is nationalism.
Well, words do matter, and the globalist community has successfully used terms like nationalist or nationalism in a negative way, and like you said, makes people think about war and
the Nazis
being prejudicial and against other countries and all that sort of thing. From my perspective, nationalism or to be a nationalist doesn't necessarily equate with being xenophobic or anything like that. It's just another word for being a patriot in many respects.
Mm-hmm. Having a certain respect for your own country, countries with borders. But that's the point. It goes against, it's contrarian thought
Absolutely.
To the globalist movement, as to your point, that has been really underway since this side of World War II.
The globalist one world movement, yes, it wants to eliminate borders.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's the movement towards the biblically prophesied one world government.
And that's the agenda of what we'd call, for lack of a better term, the progressive socialists.
Absolutely.
I mean, we've got the UN, we've got the World Trade Organization, we've got the World Court, we've got the International Monetary Fund. I mean, all these international organizations that are all geared toward attempting to control under this guise of climate change and trying to put and assign carbon footprints on the population of the world. All this is just globalism to the max.
Right, and it really goes back, at least in the modern era, because there's always been a movement towards globalism in the sense that, Alexander the Great ruled the known world of his day.
Right.
You know, Rome ruled the world of its day. So from that respect, there have been world governments before. But the one that we're talking about that's prophesied to happen is going to be all-inclusive, and it really will rule the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it really goes back in modern times to the League of Nations, which was
after
World War I. There was so much carnage, so many millions that died, that it changed everything in the geopolitical spectrum on planet Earth.
And to their credit, though, let me interrupt just a minute, but to their credit, the intent was noble.
Absolutely.
I think the intent was really commendable.
Yes, indeed.
In some regards, because it was an effort, an initiative after the war that they thought would end all wars, to bring humanity together, to try to help understand each other's differences.
And unfortunately, history is good, full of good intentions.
Mm-hmm.
The record is there, you know. Many good intentions that have ended up disastrous.
Right, right.
Because man, on his own, will come to naught. If you leave God out of the equation, which is what man does, then the consequence will not be good.
Exactly. And again, to your point, man is oftentimes manipulated by the force, the spiritual forces, because our fight is not against flesh and blood, as we're told. There is a arch enemy called Satan the devil, who is behind the curtain. He's the Wizard of Oz, if you could use that terminology.
Yes.
He's the guy in many respects that is pulling the strings, because you can make a case, Wayne, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you could make a case that the legacy of humankind has been effort after effort after effort by empire after empire after empire, or king after king, or emperor after emperor, of attempting to try to acquire world rule. to acquire some kind of superiority over as much real estate as they possibly can. You mentioned Alexander the Great. You had Napoleon.
Yeah.
You had Hitler. So many, you know, that over the centuries of humankind, the Roman Empire itself and all the emperors that
And we see that in the Bible going all the way back to the days of Nimrod shortly after the flood, the Noachian flood.
Right, city-states.
Exactly. And then, of course, God inspired the book of Daniel, where we see the image of the beast, the great... The
head of gold.
The head of gold and this king and the different eras of time based upon the different metals that he was made out of and so forth, different world kingdoms. And so there's been a movement towards that one way or another all through history.
And that pattern is ultimately, as you pointed out earlier, ultimately going to take shape and, frankly, successfully control the world.
Absolutely, yes.
So
when the Lord Jesus Christ returns, he will be returning to a world under the domination of a beast power and an individual called the beast as well. And it's going to be what the Bible has prophesied, a one-world government.
But it doesn't dismiss, and it's interesting, my friends, that we here in the United States, now in the post-situation, the post-time and era and condition of a very hostile election cycle, I mean, Donald Trump winning the presidency, I mean, come on, I mean, you know it as well as I do, Hillary Clinton was a shoo-in, as at least all the pundits and many of the social progressives all expected her to really get in without a shake. And poor Bernie Sanders, I mean, he didn't stand a chance, as we found out through WikiLeaks, that his days were numbered from the
start. Democratic Party had it rigged against him. Yeah,
it was rigged.
Because they all were absolutely confident that Hillary Clinton was going to be the president.
Yeah.
And I think the confidence was such that she didn't even she didn't go and do those things that she should have done to garner the votes in certain areas.
Yeah.
She ignored certain places.
Took them for granted.
She took them for granted, and they had a big surprise.
Yeah.
No one, I don't think anyone who was really thinking clearly, expected Donald Trump to win.
Well, what, in my humble opinion, and certainly this subject to debate, I'm sure, and I'm sure some of you will debate this issue, but in all due respect to the whole election process here recently, and this is reflective, I believe, on a much broader scale worldwide, because it goes to the point of the Brexit movement in the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. It goes to the fact that even right now, as we're sitting here today, my friends, I don't know how many of you know this or not. We just did an Armor of God program on some of these facts that we're talking about. But there are about 8 to 10 nations within the European Union today, as we speak, that are all considering referendums to exit the European Union. What does that mean? It means it looks like the European Union is unraveling, Wayne, right before our eyes.
That's correct. And in those same countries, there is a political movement to the right.
Yes.
Yes.
Nationalism.
Nationalism.
Right.
And what some would call nationalism.
Others are calling it populists.
That's right. And it's going on in France. It's going on in Netherlands,
Holland, Austria,
yes.
Slovakia,
and so the potential for this Brexit movement to to spread, so to speak.
Yeah,
they're talking about it.
This Marine Le Pen, the candidate, populist candidate, basically in France, who claims if she gets elected, she too is going to go ahead and engage an initiative, a referendum, to exit the European Union. And even Merkel, Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, she's feeling the heat.
Yes, indeed.
She's feeling, as they would say, the burn.
Yeah. Right.
You know, with regards to the fact that she may run the risk of not being reelected.
Well, a lot of the liberal agenda has shown that it's it doesn't bring a lot to the table.
Right. Over the years now.
Right. And many of their goals have proven to be not in the best interest of the vast majority of the people. And I think a lot of people have started to realize that. And they have seen the United States, for instance, being the safety net for the rest of the world for so long, and people are starting to resonate to the things Donald Trump was saying when he was, saying, how about America first?
And that is the key, Wayne. That's the nail on the head. No joke. I believe, again, my humble opinion, again, certainly debatable, send in your comments, but the fact of it is, that is what many on the other side of the aisle missed, and that was this populist connection, this fact of the common Joe finally locking in to a candidate, somebody that seemed to recognize, understand their interests, their concerns, their worries, and especially about the elephant in the room that nobody wants to really address in the way of immigration and, of course, refugees, unvetted, unqualified, undocumented, and specifically, let's face it, and coming from areas that really are known to want to do harm to the West.
Well, you know,
namely Islamic Muslims, an invasion of their civilian population.
Exactly. And from my perspective, and I'm sure you'll resonate with this, Bill, for the last, well, really since the end of World War II, starting with some decisions that the Supreme Court handed down shortly after World War II, we've been moving more and more towards secular humanism in this country.
Right.
And we've been pushing God away. We have taken His name and His Ten Commandments off of buildings and so forth.
Thrown them out of our schools.
We've forbidden prayer in school, all kinds of things like that. We've been pushing God away, and because He's real, and He's not some ethereal idea, but He's actually real, He's obliged to go if we're going to push Him. And as He goes, He takes a lot that we take for granted with Him. Our genius as a nation, our entrepreneurial success, our courage, all that success that we've had as a nation, it rests on God's shoulders. And as we push Him away, there is a consequence to Him moving back.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those consequences is common sense. And I submit to you that a nation who doesn't protect its own border has no common sense.
Mm-hmm.
A nation who will
no
not
nation.
Will no longer be a sovereign nation.
Right.
You must protect your own borders.
Mm-hmm.
And we are almost unique in that respect on planet Earth. Every other nation protects its borders.
Mm-hmm.
But because we're the United States and we've been rich and wealthy and powerful over the years, this mindset has developed that, well, we ought to just let everybody in to enjoy the wealth. I mean, after all, how dare us enjoy our wealth without giving it to everybody else?
But it goes to this point, Wayne, and we're talking about globalism versus nationalism. The fact is, the United States has been the biggest target on the One World Order menu for a long time.
The United States stands in the way. They
exactly.
cannot achieve their goals as long as the United States continues to be what it has been historically.
Because if it's perceived to be able to counterpunch and... uniquely enough, we've got a counterpuncher in the White House right now, even by his own admission.
Yeah.
But as long as the United States is perceived to be able to counterpunch, it will maintain its balance of power role, you know, in the world as a balance of power. But in all due respect, the day that that goes away and the United States is perceived no longer to be able to go ahead and counterpunch, then we've got a major problem on the world scene.
Yeah, and your portrayal of Donald Trump as a counterpunch is it's accurate, and it resonates with memories of mine. Counterpunching is how it really works.
Yeah, in boxing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he is that. He is a counterpuncher.
You know, just as a sidebar, I just can't help in some cases to be amused at some of the people that have been involved in some of the biggest scandals that we have experienced since going back, let's say, to the savings and loan scandals with Milken, who milked all the savings and loans company, Bernie Madoff, who made off with $50 billion, you know, of people's invested hard-earned money.
He made off with all that money.
That's my point, yeah. And now we've got a guy named Weiner who was, you know what, doing across the Internet. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
But now we've got a president.
No comment necessary there.
Yeah. And then we've got a president named Trump,
yes,
who trumped all those candidates.
Trumped it all,
yeah. So just amazing. I just sidebar. I'm just kind of amused by some of these things, and certainly don't mean any harm by it. But it's just amazing to me how dynamic the times are that we are in right now, and how the globalists, in all due respect to the globalist movement, in all due respect to these relentless one world order folks, they are, as I've already said, relentless in their agenda and in their planning.
And it's out in the open now.
Yeah.
In years gone by, it was more clandestine.
Mm-hmm.
And really, we've had globalists in high positions of authority in our country, including the presidency, since the days of Woodrow Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
And virtually every president since then fits that picture of,
right,
of a globalist.
Mold. Yeah.
Many of them, hopefully all of them, had the interests of the United Nations, or the United States rather, at heart, and they were not traitors or anything like that. But their overall philosophy clearly was a movement towards a one world centralized government.
Uh-huh.
They see that as the only way to save planet Earth, so
right,
to speak.
Yeah. It is amazing. Like you said years ago, if we were talking along these lines, and that's what's so new in our verbiage, in our dialogue today. My friends, do you realize we're talking about nationalism versus globalism? We're talking about one world order. We're talking about a socialistic coalition in the latter days that's going to take control of the world. I mean, this kind of speech,
it's remarkable enough that we're even talking about it.
In these terms, it was conspiracy back
because
20,
that
25
tells us
years
it's
ago.
It's real, yeah. We're talking about it.
And
so
it is
the
real.
News is full of it.
Right, yes. Along with some of the things that we've had disclosed to us now via the compliments of WikiLeaks, via the compliments of this guy named Snowden. No matter what you think of these guys and this transgender guy named Manning, who was in the military, was a guy, but now he's a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Fact is, regardless of what you might think about all these people, the reality of it is what they disclosed to all of us now is truly validating, in the sense that, you know what, your Samsung TV could be hacked. Your iPhone could be hacked. I've often said, you know, turn your phone off so the government can listen. Because no matter whether it's on or off,
yeah,
they can hear you in some cases.
Absolutely. I saw a thing the other day on TV. I'm not sure what channel or network it was, but they were talking about the fact that it's possible now that if you're going to buy one of these new, modern, thin, big-screen TVs, flat-screen TVs and all that, the wiring is in there, the parts are in there that can actually take, you know, be invasive of your privacy.
Yeah, exactly. They can
all
listen
they have to
you.
Do is to be able to remotely turn it on somehow.
Yeah. Well,
now,
see,
that sounds conspiratorial, I admit it, but just a few years ago, everything sounded like a conspiracy.
But just because
now it's happening.
But just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're not chasing you.
That's it. That's my point. Yeah,
I'll tell you, it is just amazing. I know you feel like putting a piece of tape over that camera that's on your television.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Because the fact of it is, you don't know, and it is admitted fact now that the CIA has generated some invasive action in putting back doors, as I think they call them. I'm not a techie, but I think they call them back doors where they can get in and do things that even some of the companies like Google and not Apple so much, but Google and Oracle and some of these chip manufacturers like Cisco and so on don't even know in some cases,
sure.
You know, how that stuff's being put in there.
Yeah.
But I guess it goes all to this point, Wayne, that we are now, my friends, in a brave new world. And without a doubt, it is a confirmed reality. I mean, we are living in some very, very strange and in some cases disorienting times.
And we see things now in the every day in the newscast that resonate, for those of us who are students of God's Word, it resonates with an end-time scenario. It's called eschatology, the study of the end time.
Absolutely, yeah.
And we're moving down that road now very, very quickly.
In my mind, I've got kind of a wild imagination anyway, but be that as it may, now I'm beginning to see more clearly about how this mark of the beast, knowing the technologies that we have today, can be something so much larger than just the Sabbath day. Not saying that that won't be part of it, but I don't believe...
No, it's much broader, much bigger.
Because we're talking about the fact that if you don't have this mark, you can't buy, you can't sell, you can't eat, you can't be a sociocrat, a citizen of that system that ultimately is going to come up onto the world stage.
Which you will either support up here for real, or... Even if it's not real for you, you'll support it with your
hands
and your work.
Exactly.
In the obvious world.
Exactly, yeah. And I can see now, that because of the technologies that we have, what could be used to be able to control us, to be able to surveil us, to watch us, and to keep those populations that are needing to be controlled under the control of the government.
Well, all these things make me want to be more familiar with God's Word, because it very clearly talks about the end time.
Yeah, and it's really something, too, to realize that there is going to be a generation. It may not be our generation, but there is going to be a generation that is going to have to deal with these issues. They're going to have to make decisions, my friends. Your Bible says, when the time comes to receive that mark, you better not receive that mark. God is very serious about His people who know better not to receive that mark, but rather take, I guess, the consequences. Not I guess, but to take the consequences of what is going to happen.
And there may be a consequence. What a lot of people don't realize is that the most righteous people, if you look at the Bible, you'll find that the most righteous people, the most faithful and righteous people, ended up as martyrs.
Not the weak ones.
No, the weak ones did not.
No, not those Laodiceans.
That's right. The strong ones, the faithful ones, the ones full of God's Spirit in many respects, those are the ones who suffered martyrdom and all kinds of deprivation and suffering and hardship.
Because obviously God knows that He will not test us beyond that which we can handle. So He's not going to test those that are perhaps not able to handle martyrdom-level expressions of faith.
That's just
not in His nature to do that and to put that upon somebody.
He's not a monster. He's a God of love.
Right. Yeah. He's got our best interests at heart all the time.
Right.
Best coach that we could have on our team to navigate through life.
And certainly he's more than capable and competent to protect us.
Absolutely.
He is the Almighty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there may not necessarily be a place of safety in the sense of where a whole organization will, fly off to, as was taught years ago, to Petra or to someplace, which is really nothing more than a quasi-rapture. But it doesn't mean He doesn't provide protection.
Well, my perspective about that, and I think you probably share that perspective. We've never really discussed it in detail, but if there is a so-called place of safety, I as a Christian can be completely ignorant of that or not necessarily believe in it. But if I'm in covenant relationship with Jesus Christ, if there is such a place, He can put me there.
Right.
From my perspective, you question whether or not God is really all-powerful, really omnipotent, if He needs to physically move the church from this location
group,
to another geological...
As a group.
Yes. That, to me, doesn't fit the concept of an all-powerful God. He, after all, did protect Daniel while he was with the lions, mm-hmm. and the Hebrew children while they were in the furnace. They were in a place of safety.
Mm-hmm.
So it just simply doesn't...
And the Israelites in their own homes.
It doesn't coincide with the overall imagery of God and His plan for mankind.
And certainly it goes without saying, you don't want to listen to some guy who says, it's time to leave, let's get on an airplane, send me all your money and I'll buy you your ticket and we'll all go over to some place and be protected by God.
Yeah,
I mean,
right,
you don't want to
do
that.
Right. But if you're running an organization wherein you're in charge, if you can preach and teach something like that and make your people believe it, then that empowers you even more.
Well, that's true, and that can be heady stuff and lead to, in some cases, even a sick mind.
That's a cult.
That's a cult. And that's what's ultimately going to happen when this beast power begins to emerge and surface up. He's going to be so empowered, and empowerment of that level is intoxicating. Yeah. It's not healthy. It is truly unhealthy when the acquisition of power is focused and centralized in just one person. That is a dangerous, dangerous thing. An individual told me many years ago, Wayne, that there's nothing more dangerous than a man left unto his own.
Right.
And I think those are true words.
Well, the Bible, in various ways, says that same thing, of course.
Yeah, very much, yeah.
There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the ends thereof are the ways of death.
Ways of death, yeah. And sometimes the heart is deceitful above all things.
Who can know it?
Who can know it, yeah. And you have to be careful. You have to guard your heart, your emotions. Don't allow yourself to be taken up into kind of a Twitter patient, for lack of a better term, and become enamored with something that doesn't logically make sense. I always tell my daughters, and if I have opportunity to counsel individuals, to never make a decision when you're emotionally upset or emotionally on edge or emotionally peaked. Let yourself come down, distill your emotions, then make your decision on what you're going to do.
You just described, in giving them that advice, you were describing the progressive, extreme left of center liberal mindset that works purely on emotion.
Emotion.
And that always leads to a bad outcome.
And it's sad. I mean, you see this manifested all over the place in organizations like MoveOn.org, Black Lives Matter, other types of fanatical movements where they go around breaking windows, burning police cars, all emotionally upset over, in some cases, flawed news, fake news. Things that are not true, but the people take it and run with it before the facts are brought in to where logic is hopefully running the show rather than emotions. And sadly, in retrospect, you look back and it was all for naught. But sadly, Wayne, the reality is, and I hardly see people go back and apologize. I hardly see, like, George Soros, who it's a known fact he's financed certain ones of these protests, and I'm not making this up, has not been charged with the breakage, not been billed for the windows, the police car, whatever it may be. I can't for the life
because
of me.
Because the politically correct environment is so powerful now, so all-invasive now, that the news media are completely submerged in it, and they don't bring these things up.
They really don't. In some cases, it's almost like our news media has turned into a propaganda machine,
if
you know what I mean.
And that reminds me that history is repeating itself, as it always does. It's cyclical, based upon generations. And it's repeating itself right now, moving along a line that's very reminiscent of the late 20s and the 30s.
Yes.
Things that were happening in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And
how populism.
Fake news was very instrumental, for instance, in Mussolini coming to power in a fascist government in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
It was very instrumental in Germany, for instance. Fake news that blamed the communists for everything that was wrong. And then, of course, the communists in Russia were doing the exact same thing, fake news.
Right.
And they used it to their political advantage.
And to your point, it seems like there's a lot of the same similar principles in action or in play, recognizing the similarities, not so much of the fascism that was associated with those nationalistic movements of the 30s and so on, but, again, the tension that is emerging from the current populist nationalism type movements that are going on today, and then add that to the fact that this is nationalism on steroids, because it's not focused just over there in Italy and or in Germany. This is focused on a worldwide scale. There's a wave of nationalism, Wayne.
It's called globalism.
Yes, capturing the attention and interest and excitement and enthusiasm of nation states who are now beginning to recognize their nation first.
In France and Italy and Spain and all over Europe in different countries, the Netherlands and so forth, Poland, different countries, there is a growing segment of the population in each of those countries who is beginning to rebel against what they perceive as socialist agendas that have failed.
Encroachment,
And that's why Donald Trump is president here.
Mm-hmm.
People have finally seen that sort of thing here as well.
They're fed up with politicians saying this, that, and the other thing to get elected and then do nothing once they're in office.
Well, the fact is,
other
Bill,
than gain their own wealth.
Every problem that the United States has, whether it's employment or our economy, the perceived racism that in many cases, in fact, in most cases, doesn't even really exist, but every problem that we have on the world stage and, you know, here and abroad, every problem, every one of them was created by politicians.
Mm-hmm.
It all rests upon the shoulders of the politicians.
Right.
And a lot of people are starting to realize that fact, and that's why a non-politician is now occupying the White House.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you backdrop that with the circumstances, the conditions, the frustrations, my friends, with so many people who are suffering in some of these blighted and lower income areas of the United States, or for that matter, the United Kingdom, or in other parts of Europe. And also, as we've mentioned over in other programs, about the unsung issue or the elephant in the room of these immigrating Muslim refugees and immigrants that are coming into these nations unvetted. They are undocumented, and the leaders are just letting them come in, take advantage of all the social programs that some of these socialistic governments in Europe especially, but even here in the United States, our welfare and the dole, so to speak, of our programs here are being taken advantage of and being weighed up by all of the consumption.
Right.
And that's a burden.
Yes.
That is a taxable burden on those of the populace that are paying the bills.
Well, the fact is the United States is footing the bill for so much in this world. You know, the United Nations, we pay most of the bills for the United Nations.
Yeah.
It is on American soil, after all. And we pay a huge percentage of it. I think it's more than one quarter of the total cost of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm.
We pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
We pay for most of NATO. You know, it's the United States always having to have deep pockets for the rest of the world.
And now it's coming home to roost.
And now it's
$20 trillion
because
in
the
debt.
Money starts to run out.
Yeah.
That's another thing. You mentioned trillions, and I was studying this very thing about poverty in America and the poverty rate, because there's the politicians on the left and the politicians on the right, they all quote some of the same figures to their advantage. But the fact is the poverty rate now is actually a very small percentile greater than it was when the great society programs of Lyndon Johnson back in 1964 were enacted.
Mm-hmm.
We have spent $27 trillion dollars since then.
Wow. Wow.
On social welfare engineering.
Yeah.
And it has not worked. By any reasonable stretch of the imagination, our inner cities are on the verge of, I mean, they're just falling apart.
Yeah.
The race relations in this country are the worst they've been in my lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And the infrastructure of our country is in sore need of repair. We got to save it. In fact, it's so bad.
Right.
There's more than 1,000 bridges that have already been deemed unsafe, and thousands of cars travel over them every day.
And that's not mentioning the sewage systems.
Exactly. And so we've also spent additional trillions involved in Middle Eastern wars,
mm-hmm.
and we're running out of money.
Yeah.
And the rest of the world still wants our money.
And if the truth were known, it's not $20 trillion, my friends, that we're in debt. We are in debt over $100 trillion with unfunded liabilities.
You're exactly right.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, the government
all the wealth in the world doesn't add up to that.
That's right. That's right, because it owes the whole baby boomer generation, which is what I am, millions in Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare. These are all funded liabilities. You multiply by all those millions of people.
Well, you know what it sounds like, Bill? It sounds like we're talking about a scenario that the Bible portrays for the end time.
Again,
going back to Scripture, the end time scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
exactly. And so, my friends, as we begin to close this particular session, with regards to this globalism versus nationalism, don't get your heart too set on the high bar, so to speak, of this nationalist movement and so on. Ultimately, the reality is nationalism fails. Nationalism fails. Globalism will indeed win out for a while until Jesus Christ reestablishes his kingdom on planet Earth and lands on the Mount of Olives. And boy, Godspeed that day, Wayne.
Godspeed that day. As a matter of fact, the Lord told us to pray that way.
That's
Thy
right.
Thy kingdom come.
Thy kingdom come. Yeah. Well, my friends, again, let me go ahead and interrupt ourselves. We're going to offer something unique on today's program, as it is our tradition. We want to offer you a subscription of all things to the international news. All you've got to do is hit us on our website at www.cgi.org, or go ahead and hit us Central Time 9 to 4, Central Time in the United States at 903-939-2929. But get a subscription to the international news of the Church of God International. This is our, what you could say, flagship publication that would actually help you to have some insight on just what our church culture is doing, what we're promoting, what we're involved with, where you can make more intimate connections with us in terms of our products that we have to offer in the educational venues of the Armor of God, of our publications, and all different types of other video products, YouTube stuff, and everything that will help you to enhance your relationship with God the Father and Jesus Christ. So don't hesitate. Get that subscription, the international news. Just go ahead. You can actually register with us. And that's another thing, too. Right on our homepage, you can register. Get your subscription there. But also register your email address there so we can notify you on other things that are being released that are new. We try to keep our website fresh. So go ahead. Again, 888-578-8791 and or our website at www.cgi.org or 903-939-2929. This is Bill Watson, my associate, Mr. Wayne Hendricks, once again, never saying goodbye, just saying again, until we meet again.